All right, Jamal, say good morning. Today's daf is Pei Zayin. We are picking up at the Mishnah on Pei Vav Amud Beis. A lot to do today. Says the Mishnah, Bas Yisrael, Shenisleis LeKohen. If a Bas Yisrael married a Kohen, Tocha B'Truma, she's permitted to eat Truma. Okay, so that's pretty pashut. Permitted to eat Truma. Mace, let's say the Kohen dies, V'lo Hemenu Ben, and she has a child from this Kohen. Tocha B'Truma, so remember, the existence of the Kohanic child entitles her to eat Truma even after her husband has died. Now, we'll say, now, in this case, this is the same woman. So after her Kohanic husband dies, Niseis L'Levi. All right, she's marrying down a little bit. Right, so what happens? She marries... I appreciate that, but we know it's not... I'm a Yisrael, so believe me, I'm even lower than the Levium. But she marries a step down to the Levi. So what happens? Not down, God forbid, in a qualitative way. Down, we'll call it in a entitlement way. Well, now she's only up to a second aliyah. So what happens? So she goes ahead and she marries a Levi. So what's that halacha? Nisei is a Levi. Tocha b'maiser. So both at this point in time when she marries the Levi, so now she can eat maiser. But what the Mishnah doesn't say, Rashi points out, is what happens? She can no longer eat truma. Because now in this point in time, even though she has a Kohanic child, her marriage to a Levi precludes her from eating truma anymore. Next, Mace, the Levi died. V'lahemenu ben, and she has a Levitic child. What is that? Lacha tocha b'maiser. She can continue to eat maiser even after her Levi husband dies. Now, Rabbi, listen to this. Niseis liYisrael. Okay, so it doesn't seem to be what she's going to eat is this woman's biggest problem. But in any event, again, she now, third marriage, she's married to Yisrael. So remember, again, at this point in time, she has a Kohanic child, she has a Levitic child. Now she marries the Yisrael. What's the halacha? Lo tocha b'truma v'lo b'maiser. Suppose at this point in time, she can't eat truma, right? She can't eat truma anymore because, again, remember, after she married the Levi, that's it. Or excuse me, let me take that back. She can't eat truma because now she's married to the Yisrael. She can't eat meiser because now she's married to the Yisrael. So what's the halacha? Mace. If the Yisrael husband dies, v'lohim and a ben, and she has a child with him, then still lo socha lo b'truma v'lo b'meiser. Because we want to say the existence of the Yisrael child roots her in the Yisrael marriage, and therefore she may not eat truma, nor may she eat meiser. Mace binami. So I will say, now we go back. Let's say her child from the Yisrael died. Her Yisrael child dies. Tocha b'maiser. So Rabbi say the absence of the Yisrael child allows for what? Allows for her to go back and eat meiser. Mace binami Levi. If her Levi child dies, tocha b'chuma. So we'll say again, essentially, just working backwards. If the Yisrael child dies, she goes back to her previous state. She was eating meiser. If her Levi child dies, she goes back to her previous state, and she's permitted to eat chuma. Mace binami kohen lo tocha b'chuma v'lo b'meiser. But if her son from the kohen dies, then she may not eat chuma anymore either. Taf of Pei Zayin. Bas Kohen Shenisei Sli Yisrael. Similarly, if a Bas Kohen married Yisrael, so we'll say in this case, again, remember, she's marrying, you'll excuse my expressions, but she's marrying down. But I don't mean down, you understand, like in a bad way. But the idea over here is that she's marrying away, the Kohanim think it's down, I know. So she's marrying away from privilege. She's marrying away from privilege. Because remember, as a Bas Kohen, she has entitlements to Truma. Now she's marrying a Yisrael. So what's that? Lo tocha b'truma. She may not go ahead, and once she marries Yisrael, she may not go ahead and eat Truma. Mace, if her husband, Yisrael husband, dies, v'lohe menaben, and she has a son from her Yisrael husband, lo socha b'truma. She may not go ahead and eat truma. So remember again, as you've seen already, is that the existence of a child from a marriage roots the woman in the realities of that particular marriage. So Bas Kohen marries Yisrael, can't eat truma. Husband dies and there's a child, still can't eat truma. Niseis LeLevi, if she then goes in and marries a Levi, Tocha b'maiser, she's permitted to eat maiser. However, again, parentheses, she may not what? She may not eat truma. Well, that's kind of obvious already. But she can't eat maiser. Mace, if the Levi husband dies, v'lahim, and a man, and she had a child with him, and that child is still alive, tocha b'maiser, she's permitted to eat maiser. Niseis l'kohen, if, again, and then what happens? Excuse me, let me read that again. So then Levi dies, Levi husband dies, and she has a child from Levi husband. She continues to eat maiser. Niseis l'kohen, now she goes in and marries a kohen. socha b'truma, she's permitted to eat truma. Mace, if the husband dies, v'lohe menu ben, but she has a child from that husband, tocha b'truma, she is still permitted to continue to eat truma. So we'll say again, that's the same case, same principles at work over here, just two different illustrations of the same exact case. One dealing with a bas Yisrael who marries down the chain from the Kohen through the Yisrael. And the second case is bas Kohen who marries up the chain. And same idea, when she's married to the husband, the marriage entitles her to eat whatever the husband is permitted to eat. Even if the husband dies, child roots her in that same marriage, in that same reality. However, if she remarries, the existence of a child from her previous marriage does not continue her entitlements, but rather her entitlements are reflected in the current marriage in which she's in. So next case, Meis Binami Kohen, so we'll say same thing. Let's say now working backwards, her son that she had with the Kohen died, so lo socha b'truma, she can no longer eat truma. Now Rabbi say, remember, this is Meis Binami Levi, but you remember, in both of these cases, the woman has three children, right? She has a child with the Kohen, a child with the Levi, child with the Yisrael. So in this case over here, her son from the Kohen dies, she can no longer eat truma, but she can eat Meiser, because remember, she still has a Levitic child. Meis Binami Levi, her Levitic child dies, lo socha b'meiser, she can't eat Meiser anymore. Meis Binami Yisrael, if, now we'll say in this case over here, if her Yisrael son dies, then what happens? Chozeres lebeis aviha. Now remember, this is the Bas Kohen case. So in this case, if her Kohanic son dies, if her Yisrael son dies, meaning she no longer has any children, she goes back to her default setting, which is again back to her father's home, and she is a Bas Kohen, in which case she could once again eat Shuma. Va'al zune'emar, and about this dynamic it is said, v'shava al beis avia kinu areha, she shall return to her father's home as her youth, milechem avia tochal, and she may eat of the bread of her father, i.e. she may go back to her father's Bas Kohen, could go Bas Kohen with no children, could go back to her father's home and continue to eat truma.
Any child.
Irrespective of gender. Correct. But because always the Gemara uses generic term as son for child. Gender doesn't matter. Says the Gemara, Meis Binami Levi, Tocha B'Truma. So we'll say, let's analyze this. If her son from the Levi died, she can go back and eat Truma. The Hadra Achla Mishum Bina. So as it was, again, remember, in these cases over here, and this was true in both of the cases, that once her Levitic son died, and all she was left with was what? Was her Kohanic son. Her Kohanic son, remember, this is really better in case number one. Because in case number one, it was the Bas Yisrael who married the Kohen, right? So again, she had a son, and then Kohen, Levi, Yisrael, she had a son from each of them. So the Mishnah said, remember that if the Yisrael son dies, she could eat Meiser. Levitic son dies, she could go back and eat Truma. So the Gemara says, Minalan, how do we know this? How do we know this? That the existence of a child from a Kohen, even after the Kohanic union has dissolved, still entitles a woman to eat Truma. So meaning, we know that once when a woman is married to a Kohen, that she's permitted to eat Truma. How do we know that? Well, so we had this together. Remember again, what does the Torah say? Because the Torah says that anyone who is a king in Kaspo, who was acquired by money, by the Kohen, ultimately, again, is permitted to eat Truma. Technically speaking, if a woman is married to a man, she also has an element of Kinyan Kaspo, therefore she's permitted to eat Truma. How do I know that the existence of a Kohanic child, even if she is no longer married to the Kohen, that child permits her to eat Truma? The Amarav Yaba, Amarav, Bas Ubas, because of Osai, the Pasuk says, Ubas Kohen, that additional ubas tells us that there is another woman who is able to go ahead and eat truma. Who is that other woman who is able to eat truma? This Chazal interpreted to mean this woman who has a child with a coin. So the Gemara says, so we'll say essentially it's all learned out from that vav. The extra vav comes to include an additional woman. So Kiman, whose opinion does this reflect? Rabbi Akiva, the Darash Vavi. So Rabbi Akiva is the notorious vav darshaner. As Rabbi Akiva, we had this before, not everybody agrees with the darshaning of vavs. Rabbi Akiva darshan additional vavs. The Gemara says, no, afilu tim rabbanon. Truth is, even the rabbanon would agree with this particular drasha. Why? Kula ubas krayiseru. Because the truth is, this entire phrase of Ubas Kohen is an entire extraneous phrase, and therefore it's not a question of darshaning the vav, but rather what you're darshaning the entire word. And therefore everybody agrees that this word, either it's the vav or the word itself that is extraneous, that allows us to darshan and include a woman who has a Kohanic child, as one of the people who's entitled to eat truma. Ten rabbanon kishu chazeres chazeres l'truma avinu chazeres l'chazei v'shok. Well, saying this is important. When a woman goes back to her father's home, and the Mishnah told us that she's permitted to go ahead, let's say again she has no children, and she's permitted to go back to her father's home and eat truma, it is only truma that she is permitted to eat, but what? But she is not permitted to go ahead and go back and eat the chazei v'shok. So also Rashi points out that this is referring to the pasuk, where the pasuk says that if a bas kohen is an almana and a grusha, and she could go back to her father's home, and she could continue to eat from her father's home. So the Gemara qualifies that is only true by truma, but not true by chazei v'shok. What's chazei v'shok? Chazei v'shok are the parts of the animal that a kohen is entitled to. Sacrificial parts that a kohen is entitled to. So, how do we know this? How do we know this distinction? That when she goes back to her father's home, she can eat truma, but she doesn't get any sacrificial parts because the pasuk says, "Maikra he b'chumas hakadoshim lo sochal." Because the pasuk says that she, in the chumas hakadoshim lo sochal, she may not eat. What does that mean? Bemuram min hakadoshim lo sochel. She may not eat from that which is taken from kachim, from that which is taken from sacrificial animals, which refers to the chazei v'shok, the chest and the thigh. Rav Nachman amar Rav Baravua, he learns out differently. Milechem v'lo kolechem. The pasuk says that she may eat milechem from the bread of her father's home. From the bread indicates to us what? Some of the bread, but what? Not all of the bread. What does it come to exclude? Prat lechazei v'shok. It comes to exclude the fact that she may not eat the thigh and the chest of a sacrificial animal. Maskif la Rami Bar Chama. Rami Bar Chama says, but one second, maybe the exclusionary phrase means that when she comes back to her father's home, it's not excluding her from eating certain things, but rather what? Ema, prat la faras nadarim. Maybe it means that when she comes back to her father's home, even though she's living under her father's roof, he does not have the right to what? To annul her vows. Amar Rava kvar paska tana debe Rabbi Shmuel. Rava said, we learned that already. Disanya, the tana debe Rabbi Shmuel, the neder amana ugrusha yakum aleha, that the neder that an amana, a widow or a divorcee, makes for herself shall stand. That neder that shall stand. Matam lomer, why is the Torah teaching us? Vala mutza michlal av umutza michlal baal. Rabbi say, if a woman is an amana or a grusha, so she's not in the domain of her husband and she's not in the domain of her father. So obviously, again, the only person who's going to control her vows is who? Is who? Is her? Ella hare shemasar ha'av l'shluchei abal. So rather, what's the case? The case over here is where the father gave her over to the agents of the husband. The father's marrying her off, so he gives her over to the agents of the husband. So we'll say, this is an interesting idea. Why is he giving her over to the agents of the husband? He's going to marry her overseas. You might want to consider this. This is the cheaper marriage option, right? Right. Hand her over to the shluchim of the husband, and she'll get married by the husband's house. Or for that matter, the father didn't even escort her himself, but rather the father gave her over to his agents, and his agents delivered her to the husband's agents. And what's happened? Venis armala onis garsha baderech. And Rabbi say, in this case, the husband died, or he decided to divorce her, right, while she was still traveling. So, for example, Kiddushin was already affected. Let's say, again, he sent a shaliach, and he went ahead, and the shaliach acted on behalf of the husband, gave the woman kesef Kiddushin. She's mikudesha, she's married. Now she's traveling with her husband's agents back to her husband. And on the way, the husband dies, or the husband divorces her. So, what's the halacha? Heich ani kori ba beis aviha shalzu. Obeis baila shalzu. So where does this woman, where is she holding, right? Is she considered to be in her husband's home, or is she considered to be in her father's home? Elalomer lacha, rather it teaches us, kevan shehaz ha-sha'achas mirusha sa'av, shuv eno yochal ha-hafer. Rather, what do we learn? That once a woman leaves the rishus of her husband, even for just a moment, father loses all abilities to go ahead and what? To go ahead and ever annul her vows. So Rabbi say, the idea over here is that in this particular situation, a woman was divorced from Kiddushin, or was widowed from Kiddushin, not from Nisuin. So the interesting part over here is she never fully entered her husband's home. So I might have thought that in such a situation, in such a situation, then lemaisa what? She would still be considered to be in her father's home. Kamashmala, no, that once a woman leaves her father's home, even if she has not yet entered fully into her husband's home, she is forever removed from her father's home, and her father forever loses the ability to go ahead and annul her vows. So that even if she were to literally, physically go back and live at her father's home, father still does not have that right over here. Her. Rav Safra says, Milechem avia tochal. Lechem v'lo bas. Rav Safra says, how do we know that if a bas kohen goes back to her father's home, she only has the ability to consume truma, but not chazei v'shok? Because the pasuk says, from the bread of her father's home, she shall eat. Lechem, it says bread v'lo basa. So we'll say bread refers to what? Bread refers to grain products, which Papashas is a reference to truma, but she may not eat of the sacrificial parts. Rav Papa Amar, Rav Papa said, let me lechem avia tochal. She shall eat from the bread of her father. Lechem akonei lavia. She can eat from the bread that is the property of her father. However, prat lechazei v'shok, to mishulchan gavoa kazachu. Rabbi said, this comes to exclude what? Comes to exclude the thigh and the chest of the animal, which Rabbi said are not the property of the kohen, but rather are mishulchan gavoa, are from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's table that God gifts to the Kohanim. So therefore, the Gemara's dashing over here is the Bas Kohen is only entitled to eat of those things that are the property of her father. But those things that are not the property of her father, like Chazei V'Shok, she does not have a right to eat. Now, I want to be clear. This is only when, before she gets married, she is permitted to eat of these things. Right? It's only now once she gets married and she left her father's home and now she comes back. When she comes back home as an amana or a grusha, so now she's permitted to eat truma, but not permitted to eat chazei v'shok. The Rava Amar Rava said, "Ves chazei atnufa, ve'is shokat truma tochelu ata ubanecha ubnosecha itcha." So the pasuk says. And this chazei atnufa and the shokat truma tochlu b'makom tar ata uvanecha ubnosecha itach. Excuse me, not itcha, itach. So what do we learn from this? Bizman sheitach. The only time that they could eat it is when can your daughter eat it? When she is with you. So meaning only when she's actively living with you, i.e. before her marriage, but once she has married already, even if she comes back to the paternal home afterwards, she may not eat the chazei v'shok. That's assuming, no, it's even true, even if she did marry a Kohen, she could eat his chazei v'shok, but if she comes back to her father's home, she may not eat chazei v'shok. Amar Rav Adbar Ava, Tana, ki she chozeres lebeis aviha, chozeres l'truma ve'inu, chozeres chazei v'shok. So the Rav Adbar Ava says explicitly, when she comes back to her father's home after being divorced or widowed, so she's permitted to come back and eat truma, but she cannot eat chazei v'shok. However, interestingly enough, listen to this, b'shvil b'na, Chozeres af lechazei v'shok. Now, Rabbi, here's what's interesting. This exclusion that she may not eat chazei v'shok is a specific situation about what? Where she's coming back as an almana or a grusha with no children. But if she comes back as a, now again, remember, not just with any child, but who? A Kohanic child. Because remember, if she has a Yisrael child, then what? She can't even eat truma. She's done. Remember, as you said before for the Mishnah, if a Bas Kohen has a Yisrael child, she's rooted in that Yisrael marriage. If she comes back to her father's home, either divorced or widowed, and she has a Kohanic child, then that allows her to not only eat the truma of her father's home, but even the chazei v'shok of her father's home. Also, Rav Mordechai Amar L'Shmaita Kamed Rav Ashi. So Mordechai traveled, and he went and he said over this ruling in front of Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi said, Amar Meheicha Kamas Rabbio. Where do you learn this from? So he answered, Me Ubas. We learn it out from the word ubas. The extra vav again tells us that there are additional women who are able to eat. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Mi adifa la mina. So I'll say, here's what's interesting. So essentially what you're telling me is the following. You're telling me that a woman who is a mother of a kohen is even stronger privileges than a bas kohen herself. I'll say, so let's play this out. For example, what this is saying over here is, let's say you have a woman who is a Yisraelis who married a kohen, and what? And what? And she went ahead and had a son that, technically speaking, now what? She can go ahead and not only eat truma, but can eat chazei v'shok. As opposed to a bas kohen, who's like a real, she has Kohanic blood running through her veins, that when she goes back to her father's home with no offspring, at most she could eat what? At most she could eat truma, but not chazei v'shok. So what's the pshat? So he answered, And Mordechai, I'll tell you, Hasim ksivim miuti, hachalok ksivim miuti. Very simple, because they're both like by the woman who comes back to her father's home. So what? There's a miut. There, the Torah uses an exclusionary phrase and tells us that milecham aviha, as we said before, Dafka says she can eat of the bread of her father. Dafka the bread and not chazei v'shok, but by the mother of the kohen there is no such exclusion. Therefore, she could even eat chazei v'shok. Good. Bas kohen shenisayis liyisa. So remember, I said this is the second part of the Mishnah where the bas kohen married Yisrael. Tana rabbanan of a shavel beis aviha. She shall return to her father's home. So this is a bas kohen married Yisrael, and then what? Her husband died or divorced her, and assuming that there's no right, her husband dies or divorces her. Torah says she shall go back to her father's home. Prat l'shomeres yavam. This comes to exclude what? A woman who is widowed and waiting for Yibum. If she's waiting for Yibum, then what? She does not return to her father's home for all the privileges of her father's home, i.e. Truma. Furthermore, kinua rehal, when it says she shall go back like her youth, prat l'me'uberes. This comes to exclude a woman who is pregnant. If she was married to Yisrael and now she's pregnant, she does not go back to her father's home. Obviously, she can go back and live by her father's home. That's not what we're talking about over here. It means for Truma purposes. But she would not be permitted to partake of Truma. But one second, this is a Kal v'chomer. This idea that if she's pregnant, she does not go back to her father's home and enjoy the rights and privileges of living as part of a Kohanic family. I can make a Kal v'chomer. I don't need the Pasuk. What's the Kal v'chomer? Umma b'makom shelo asa vlad min arishon ki vlad min hasheni lepocha min ayibo. Rabbi saying, if in a situation where a child from a first husband does not count as a child from a second husband, i.e., to exempt it from you, Rabbi say, so again, simple case, Bas Kohen marries Yisrael, has a child, then she marries a Levi, right? But then Yisrael dies, then she marries a Levi, and she doesn't have a child from the Levi. Levi dies, we'll just call him Levi. Levi dies childless. What's the halacha? She's subject to the laws of Yibum, even though what? She has a child from the previous marriage. We don't say that because she brings a child into the marriage. Therefore, again, the second marriage is not called childless. It's still called childless. So if in a situation where we don't make the offspring from the first marriage, like it's from the second marriage, in order to exempt her from Yibum, asa ubar kiyalud, and we also go ahead and make a pregnancy like the child is born, i.e., again, remember, if there's a pregnancy, if a woman is pregnant when she's widowed, ultimately we don't allow Yibum to happen either. We learn this until she gives birth. So therefore, again, makom sha'asu vlad min arishon ki vlad min hasheni leposel min hatruma. Therefore, in a situation where we do treat a child from the first marriage, we do recognize a child from the first marriage in the context of the second marriage, for example, to passel her from eating truma, for example, Rabosa, if she was married to a Levi, and then she married a Kohen, right? The existence of that Levitic child would, under certain circumstances, prevent her from eating Truma. Certainly, again, then what? The existence of a pregnancy should preclude her from going back to her father's home and eating Truma. To which the Gemara says, lo. Mali asa ubar kiyalod le'inyan yibum. But one second, when it comes to yibum, we treat the pregnant woman as if she's given birth, i.e., that we look at the pregnancy as a viable pregnancy, and therefore we don't allow her to do yibum. And so, remember, we had the sugi before, until she gives birth, we figure out what's going on. Shari asa mesim kechayim. Sebo said the difference by yibum also is we treat the dead like the living. What does that mean? Listen to this case. Let's say a woman is widowed, right? Rachel is married to Reuven, and they have a child together. So Reuven dies, no yibum. Then 2 weeks later, the child dies also. So what's the halacha saying? So we don't say now that the child died as an obligation of Yibum. Rather what? Once the child was alive at the time that the husband died, that's when we gauge the circumstances. And even if the child subsequently dies, that death of the child does not now generate a new obligation of Yibum. Because one can make the argument that Lamaisa, now that the child dies, the husband did effectively die childless. The question is how you define that phrase, dying childless. Is dying childless framed at the time when the husband actually dies, in which case if the child is alive then he didn't die childless? Or do we say, no, if the child ultimately dies, then the husband did in fact die childless. So the Gemara is saying over here that by Yibum, as long as the child is alive at the time the husband died, then there is no obligation of Yibum. However, and therefore in that case a pregnancy is considered to be like the child is alive already, therefore again would preclude Yibum. Le'inyan Truma, when it comes to Truma, Shelo Asa Mesim Kechayim, right? We don't make the dead like the living. What does that mean? Let's say a Bas Yisrael is married to a Kohen. The Kohen dies, they have a child, Kohen dies. The existence of that Kohanic child allows her to what? eat truma. Now let's say the child dies. What happens? What's the halacha? She can no longer eat truma. So again, when it comes to truma, we don't make the dead like the living. Talmud lomar kinu areha. Therefore, the pasuk teaches us kinu areha. Prat lemeuberes teaches us that if a bas kohen was married to Yisrael and she's widowed, but she's pregnant at the time that her husband dies, she cannot return back to her father's home for truma purposes. And I need both psukim. I need the exclusion of meuberes, and I need also the Torah to tell me v'zera inla that she did not have children. Because we'll say again, remember what we're learning out now is kinu areha tells us that she returns back to her father's home if what, as long as she is not pregnant, as long as she's not pregnant from a Yisrael husband. And remember v'zera inla teaches us that she can't have children. So meaning, let me say it differently. V'zera teaches us that it's only if she doesn't have children that she can return back to her father's home to truma. So it appears that we have two redundant phrases. So kinu areha and vezera inla are both teaching us that the only way she returns back to her father's home to eat truma is if she has no offspring from her Yisrael husband. So why do I need both? To which the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. V'yitzchuk l'michtav me'ubaras, v'yitzchuk l'michtav vezera inla, because of Rachman of vezera inla, because had the Torah just written that she doesn't have children, me'ikara chad gufa, I would have said the following, because in the beginning, right, meaning beforehand, she was one body, v'hashta trei gufi, and now there are two, i.e. her and her child, aval me'ubaras, the me'ikara chad gufa, v'hashta chad gufa, e'motecho, so you'll say, vezera inla would teach me that when can she go back and eat at her father's home, when literally there's offspring, meaning that before when she was young, she was only one entity, now she's two, meaning mother and child, that's when she can't, Beres, where technically speaking it's all one body, so maybe she should be able to eat truma. Therefore the Torah has to say kinu areha v'kasa rachmana mu'uberes, and if the Torah would have just said mu'uberes, meaning would have just excluded mu'uberes from the word kinu areha, then d'me'ikara gufa srika, beforehand again we'll say gufa srika means an empty body, v'hashta gufa malaya, and now her body is full, i.e. she's pregnant, aval zera inla d'me'ikara gufa srika, v'hashta gufa srika. But again, based on the pasuk of v'zera in law, she physically is the same. In the beforehand, her body was empty, so to speak. And now, again, remember, she's already given birth to a child, so her body is empty again. Emalo, I might have thought that she's not precluded from eating truma, therefore tzricha, therefore both psukim essay. So we'll say, therefore, Torah has to teach me that both a woman who is pregnant as well as a woman who has a child, again, by a Yisrael husband who now either died or divorced her, that in both of these cases, this woman would be precluded from, this Bas Kohen would be precluded from going back to her father's home and once again resuming truma, even though her marriage to the Yisrael is now over. So the Gemara now gives a mnemonic, Simon Amrle Lo Nasa Maaseh Misa Nasa Lo Nasa Bavlad Yavam Truma Yivarfa. It's just a mnemonic. Amrle Rav Yehuda Mida Askarta L'Rava. So Rav Yehuda from Askarta said to Rava, Lo Naaseh Mesim Kechayim L'Inyan Yibam Mikava Chomer. The Rabbah say, one of the interesting things that the Gemara said before is that we hold that the dead are like the living for Yibam purposes. Remember what this meant? So this meant, again, that if a woman, Rachel is married to Reuven, they have a child together, Reuven dies, because there is a child, therefore, Lemaisa what? Rachel is not subject to Yibam. And even if the child subsequently dies, she's still not subject to Yibam, because we count it as if the child was still alive for Yibam purposes. So that's what it means when it says that we make Mesim Kechayim, we make the dead like they are alive. So Rav Yehuda from Askarta said to Rava, perhaps we shouldn't say that by Yibam. From a Kavachomer, what's the Kavachomer? Now, if in a situation where within the context of a second marriage, we actually take into account the child from the first, and under certain circumstances, as enumerated in the Mishnah, that would preclude her from eating truma, lo asa meisim kechayim, yet in that same case, we do not make the dead like the living, meaning that Rabbah say, if a Bas Yisrael has a Kohanic child, then what? And that child dies, she may no longer eat truma. So in a situation where we do not reckon the child from a first marriage in the context of a second marriage, i.e. by Yibum. So even if she had children from a first marriage, she doesn't have, if the second husband is childless, there is still an obligation from Yibum. Shouldn't it go without saying that what? That we make the dead like the living. Talmud Lomar, excuse me. Would the din not be that we do not reckon the dead like they are alive? I.e., that should she lose her child, chas v'shalom, then what? That perhaps that should generate an obligation for Yibum. Well, so listen to this. This is amazing. Talmud lomar, derachah darchei noam, v'chol nesivosah shalom. So I'll say this is such an important Gemara. So what's the answer? The answer is that the ways of the Torah are pleasant, and all of its pathways are peaceful. Now, we'll say, now, what does that mean? So look at Rashi for just a moment. Racha darchei noham, v'zu shahaya laben, v'lo niskeka lo yavam, v'niseis l'shuk l'meis b'na, im tomar tachlots, harehi miskana abayla, hilchach akarchach bein ish, bein einlo b'shas misa, bein einlo b'shas misa, kamar v'har yesh. I must listen to this. Here's the concern. Let's play this out. Let's say you say that halocha l'meisa, when a woman goes ahead and has a child, right? Rachel's married to Reuven, and now what? And now they had a child. Reuven dies. So when Reuven dies with a child, then what? No obligation of Yibum. Rachel marries Yaakov, someone totally unrelated. Unrelated. What happens? Then her chas shalom, her child dies. Child dies. See, if you're going to say that now what? Now she has to do chalit. Let's even call it chalitza, because she's not going to do Yibum. She's married to another man, so she's not going to do Yibum. She'll do chalitza with this other guy. Then what's going to happen? The concern is that Yaakov is going to see that now she's doing chalitza with the brother of her deceased husband, and it's not going to give him a good feeling, meaning that she's attached to another man. She has now this connection with another man. Again, not that she chose it, with circumstances visited upon her, but what? It runs the risk of disrupting the shalom of this second marriage. Therefore, it can't be, essentially what the Gemara is saying over here is, it can't be that her second marriage will be in a constant state of suspended animation, always wondering, will she be subject to Yibum if her son dies? Therefore, it has to be that the Yibum obligation is clearly examined at the time of the death of her husband, and either there is or there isn't a Yibum obligation. But there's no such thing as this idea that there could be like this suspended, maybe one day she will be subject to Yibum, maybe one day. Why? Because the ways of the Torah are pleasant, and the ways of the Torah are not there to make people's lives complicated. You know, Klal Gadol in Judaism, if your Judaism is giving you anxiety, or if your Judaism is causing you incredible difficulty, then chances are you're doing something wrong. Because Torah is pleasant, Yiddishkeit is pleasant, everything about being a Jew is pleasant. Doesn't mean it's easy, doesn't mean it's easy, but at the end of the day, everything is pleasant. So such an amazing answer. So therefore, there's no way that we could go ahead and make the Yibum obligation dependent on how long the child lives or doesn't live for, because that would totally upend her ability to rebuild her life. So why don't we say that the dead are reckoned like the living for truer purposes? I will say, now, what does that mean? So why don't we say that if a woman has, a Bas Yisrael has a child from a Kohen, that as long as she had the child from the Kohen at the time that the Kohen died or divorced her, that what? That should lock in her ability to eat Truma for how long? Forever. Again, assuming she doesn't remarry to someone other than a Kohen. Let it lock in. And even if the child dies, we should say that Lamaisa what? The existence of that child at the moment that the marriage was dissolved secures her ability to go ahead and eat Truma going forward. What's the Kavachor? Ma b'makom shelo asa? Now, if in a situation where what? Where we did not make the offspring from the first marriage, like the offspring from the second marriage, ayin yibum, to exempt her from a yibum circumstance, we went ahead and we made the dead like the living. That's by Yibum. The postman of Truma, if in a situation where we reckon the child from the first marriage in the context of the second marriage, i.e. to exempt her, not to exempt her, but to prohibit her from Truma, certainly again, the dead should be reckoned like the living. Talmud Lomar, Vizera Ein La. Therefore, the Pasuk says, she does not have any offspring, Vizera Ein La, Vaha Ein La, and she does not have V'na'asev La Min Arishon. Why don't you go ahead and treat the offspring from the first husband like the offspring from the second husband for Yibum purposes, i.e. that if she was married and she had children from the first marriage, that, and then again she gets married a second time and no children from the second marriage, let the existence of the children she brought into the second marriage obviate the need for Yibum, So we'll say in a situation where we did not recognize the dead as the living, i.e. for truma purposes, that she's only permitted to eat truma if what? If she has a living child from a kohen, but not if the child dies. But yet again, we take into account the children from the first marriage, even when she's married to the second husband, in order to prohibit her from eating truma. In a situation where we treated the dead like the living, i.e. for yibum, like that, as long as she had, meaning that even if her child subsequently died, there's still no obligation for yibum. However, we certainly should take into account what? The children from the first marriage, even in the context of the second marriage. Tamud lomar ubein ein lo. Therefore, the pasuk says, again, she does not have a child, ubein ein lo, vaha ein lo, and there is no child in this situation. Velo na'aseh vlad min arishon ke vlad min asheni l'trum, mikal v'chomer. And why don't we say that the vlad, the offspring of the first husband, should not be made like the offspring of the second husband for truma purposes, for invalidation purposes, mikal v'chomer. So we'll say in a situation where what? We did not make the mesim like the chayim, the dead like the living, to exempt them from yibum. So we did not make the vlad of the rishon like the vlad of the sheni. In a situation where we what? Where we did not make the living like the dead for truma purposes. All the more so, we should not make it like the vlad from the rishon, we should not make the offspring from the first marriage like the offspring from the second marriage. Tamud lomar ein la v'ha yesh la. Therefore, the pasuk says she does not have offspring, but in this case, of course, she does. So, we'll say again, these were all different ways ultimately of learning out the same basic halacha. So, again, remember the results remain unchanged. So, halacha lamaisa, what comes out from this entire situation is the following. So first of all, again, that when a Bas Kohen is widowed or a Bas Kohen is divorced, if there are no children, she goes back to her father's home for Truma, but not what? But not for Chazei V'shok, right? But not again, for sacrificial meat. That's number one. Number two, we've also established that Lamais, again, when a woman is married so and has a child, the existence of that child, even after the dissolution of her marriage, does what? Goes ahead and entitles her to continue, to almost continue the state of that marriage. So if she was a Bas Yisrael married to a Kohen and has a Kohanic child, that gives that child, entitles her to go ahead and eat Truma, and also entitles her into them to eat Chazei V'shok. Bas Yisrael marries a Bas Levi, no Bas Yisrael is marrying a Bas Levi, but a Bas Yisrael who goes ahead and marries a Levi, and then they have a child, again, the existence of that child allows her to continue to go ahead and eat Meiser, and the converse is true as well. A Bas Yisrael who goes ahead and marries, a Bas Kohen who marries a Yisrael, and then has a child with that Yisrael, and the Yisrael dies and divorces her, the existence of that Yisrael child, what? Precludes her from going ahead and going back to her father's home and eating truma and meiser. Hadron aloch yesh musaros. Ha'isha shalach pa'al medinas yom. So we'll say a lot to do still. We have a few minutes, so we'll try to get in as much as we can. We'll say, now this is a very interesting sugya. A woman go. Ha'isha shalach pa'al medinas yom. A woman whose husband went overseas, traveled overseas. Uba uva amrula meis ba'alech. And Rabbi saying, now we're going to discuss exactly who is telling her this. Who, now Rashi kind of gives this away a little bit. Rashi says, Ba'ova Amrullah Be'ed Echad Kidakim Gemara. So the Gemara is going to discuss that this is a case of an Eid Echad. One witness is coming and telling her, your husband died. Your husband died. Okay. Therefore what? Vini says, and she got remarried. The Achakach Ba Baila. And surprise, right? Who shows up to the Shavar Brachas? Right? Husband number one shows up. Husband number one shows up. So what's the, obviously we've got a little bit of a problem. Because now, again, the truth is her husband number one is married, which means that effectively she has committed adultery. Now, again, not intentional by any stretch of the imagination. And we'll see that depending on the circumstances, we'll determine her level of culpability for this. But she cannot remain married to either of these men. Because although it was not intentional, it was an unintentional act of adultery. And in any act of adultery, remember again, a woman is asr labal and laboel. She is asr to the man whom she was married to, and she is asr to the man with whom she committed adultery. So she has to leave both of them. Utzricha get mizeh umizeh. Obviously, we'll discuss all of these things. She requires a get from each of them. I will say this is very interesting, right? Because you would think that she shouldn't require a get from who? from husband number two. Because if husband number one is really allowed, a woman can't marry two men. So therefore, again, halachically, there was no second marriage. That's called adultery, not a second marriage. So therefore, but we'll discuss what she needs to get from both. Ve'in lo ksuva, ve'lo peros, ve'lo mazonos, ve'lo belos, lo alze, ve'lo alze. And she has no claim for ksuva. She has no claim for peros. That's what I'll say. If the husband ended up consuming some of her property, she has no claim for compensation. Ve'lo mazonos, no support. Ve'lo belos. And again, if there are any other, we'll discuss this case as well, about worn out property that she may not take with her, not on husband number one, not on husband number two. Vim natla mizeh mizeh. And if she took stuff from husband number one or husband number two, tachzir, she has to give it back. Furthermore, v'havlad mamzer mizeh umizeh. Now, I will say, this is very interesting. And children from marriage number one or children from marriage number two are both mamzerim. Now, I will say, now, what is this talking about? This is not, of course, referring to the children that she had with husband number one before he went overseas. Those children are totally fine. What this is referring to is the following. What this is referring to is like this. Husband number one went overseas. She got the testimony that he died. She got remarried to husband number two. She had children with husband number two. So those children are mamzerim. Now we understand, because those children are the result of adultery. If after husband number one comes back, she goes back to live with husband number one and has children with husband number one after his return, those children are mamzerim as well. Now, I will say, we will discuss, they are not mamzerim midoraisa. They are what we call rabbinic mamzerim, because remember, technically speaking, she is still married to husband number one. So we'll discuss again what type of mamzerim we're talking about. Velo ze, velo ze, veze metamila. And I will say, if husband number one or husband number two are both kohanim, and then she dies, neither have the ability to become tummy for her. Furthermore, again, neither husband has an entitlement to anything she finds or is entitlement to her earnings, nor do they have the right to annul her vows. If she was a Bas Yisrael, this whole episode of having married the second time essentially makes her a Zona, and therefore if she decides to get married a third time, she may not marry a Kohen. Ubas Levi mina Meiser. And again, if she's a Bas Levi, she may no longer eat Meiser. Ubas Kohen mina Truma. If she's a Bas Kohen, even if she goes back to her father's home now, she may not eat Truma. Velo Yorshin Shalzeh, V'Yorshin Shalzeh, Yorshin Es Ksuvasa. And neither her children from her first marriage or her second marriage have the ability to inherit her Ksuvah. Meaning, if she predeceases the husbands, so again, no one inherits her Ksuvah. V'Imesu Echav Shalzeh, V'Echav Shalzeh, Chelzen, Velo Miyavmin. And furthermore, again, if the husbands die, let's say without children, so neither set of brothers could go ahead and do Yibum, but rather both will have to do Chalitza. Alright, Rabbi Sinat, we'll stop over here. We'll pick up with Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah Mirat Hashem tomorrow. We're going to see. From what? So we're going to see. Some are Daraisa, some are Rabbanan. Usually what will end up happening.